This time he hits the ball to deep right field. Cody Bellinger has done it! And the Dodgers lead in Game 7. Towering fly ball. The Dodgers come from behind in the series. They come from behind in Game 7. And they win the National League pennant. For the third time in 4 years, the Dodgers are going to the World Series.
Dodgers come back from a 3-1 deficit in the series, knock off the Braves. Final score last night, 4-3. Series goes to the Dodgers, 4-3. Missed opportunity for sure for the Braves, not only in the series but within the game last night. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. We'll start with the baseball playoffs, and we'll start with that exciting Game 7 between the Dodgers and the Braves. Coming up, we'll talk Chiefs-Bills as they play today at 4 o'clock, plus a recap local sporting events from over the weekend. But the Dodgers and the Braves last night, this game was lost in the fourth inning. Did you watch the game, Dusty?
I didn't see all of it, so I didn't see that.
So you don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, in the fourth inning, the Braves had a 3-2 lead. They had runners at second and third with nobody out. Second and third, nobody out. 3-2, had Dodgers on their heels, and Nick Markakis hit a hot shot to third, and for some reason, Darby Swanson went home.
Yeah.
So they throw home, and what Austin Riley is doing at second, I have no idea. And so right away, I saw that he wasn't even close to third in the rundown, and I'm like, dude, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's going to try to go to third. What is he doing? I knew he was a dead duck. I could see it with the shot on TV. I'm like, oh, my goodness, what is the Braves doing? First of all, should never gone on a hot shot like that. Secondly, when you do, the guy behind has to get to the next base if you're going to get next base. If you won't or can't, then you stay where you are.
Yeah.
And this is what we teach our kids in K18 baseball. We taught them in Pee Wee baseball. And it is amazing in a major league level. It happened last night in Game 7 of the National League Championship Series. And that is, when you hesitate, you're dead. We've said this a million times as coaches in baseball.
Yeah.
When you hesitate, you might as well just go back to where you came from. And what I mean is go back to the base you came from. When you hesitate and then you decide to take the next base, 9 times out of 10, it does not end well. When you hesitate, it's too late. You have to know right away to go. And when you are unsure of yourself on the base paths, you better just go back to the base you had. It's better, even though you should have been at third instead of second, it's better to be at second than be thrown out at third because you hesitated and weren't paying attention or don't know how to run the bases. And last night, the Braves blew the game in the fourth inning. I know it was 3-2 and they led at that time. That's where the game was lost, because you know how many hits the Braves got after that inning? Zero. Only one batter reached after that, and I was on a walk. The game completely changed on that base-running blunder, and it was two within one play.
Mm-hmm.
And the Braves ran themselves out of a World Series berth. And then, of course, Mookie Betts robbing a home run in right field was a gigantic play as well, no question. And then Bellinger's homer, Kiki Hernandez with the pinch hit, homer to tie it. And then, of course, Bellinger, which I had this weird feeling he was going to do something. They kept flirting with the pitches down the middle a little bit and on the edge. I'm like, oh, God. And then, boom, he just crushed it, and he got to admire it. And it was a no-doubter. And the Dodgers win. The Braves, I thought, were the better team in the series, but they just made too many mistakes in crunch time. And the Dodgers been there, done that. And they're a little deeper with their pitching staff. But the Braves ran themselves out of a World Series berth last night. And, you know, the other day in Game 6, they had bases loaded, runners at second and third, and couldn't score a run. So there's those two situations in this series for the Braves, where they had the Dodgers on their heels, and they had them, I wouldn't say scared, but boy, they had them where they wanted them, and the Braves completely let it go right down their leg is about the nicest way I can put it.
Mm-hmm.
That was just tough to watch. I'm sitting here going, you know, we teach our kids at this level to run the bases in K-18. We've taught them in Pee Wee baseball. We taught them, when we teach them at every level of baseball, to run the bases, and it is amazing to me, and one of the biggest games of your life, and two Braves runners do the wrong thing on the same play, and thus do not score a run, by the way, because they have a runner at first with two outs. They literally ran themselves out of a World Series berth with horrible base running last night. And when it happened, I was like, the Braves are not going to win this game. I just knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I knew it, but I just was like, man, you're going to look back, and I don't see many teams make that big of a mistake and not after the game we go back and say that's where it changed, because teams just don't make those type of mistakes and still win. They just don't.
Yeah.
And the margin of error and room for error in Game 7 of the NLCS is very, 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 very thin. And when you make such a huge, unbelievable bad base running mistake, not one but two on the same play, you're just asking for trouble. And the Dodgers, Mookie Betts, and Cody Bellinger robbed Braves of home runs in this series multiple times. The Dodgers made the defensive plays when they had to, and the Braves made mistakes when they really had a chance to go to the World Series. And I feel for the Braves and their fans. At the same time, the Dodgers, they didn't make the mistakes. They deserve to be there. And here we are, Dodgers versus the Rays. And I'm thinking Major League Baseball is happy the Dodgers are in the World Series and not the Braves versus the Rays. And the Rays got by the Astros after losing games 4, 5, and 6. Looked like they were going to lose 7, but got early lead and it held on and beat the Astros, which is the way it should be. Astros cheated last year in the past. And, of course, the Rays have been the best team in the American League all year. So we do have the two best teams in the World Series.
Yeah.
The Dodgers are the best team, 43-17. They were better than the Braves during the regular season. And the best team in the American League was the Rays with a payroll of a whopping $28 million. The Yankees have a player on their team that makes more than $28 million. And they got bounced in 5 games by the Rays, who have one of the lowest payrolls in baseball. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm cheering for the Rays because I like the small guy in this one. I like the underdog. I like the team with the low, low, low payroll. Guess how big a payroll the Dodgers have? One of the highest in baseball. Kershaw makes more than the Rays payroll. So I'm cheering for the little guy. I'm cheering for the Rays. Now, if the Dodgers win it, great. They've been so close so many times. And if the Dodgers don't win the World Series this year, I have to ask, will they ever win the World Series?
Yeah.
Because they have had some really good teams. And but I'm sorry. I know my neighbors are big Dodger fans, but I'm going to cheer for the Rays. Although Dodgers win it, fine. They deserve it. But, man, the Braves had their chances.
Absolutely. It took me a while to remember what you were talking about there, but yeah, I did see the play, and it's like, well, first of all, why is the guy going from third?
You don't go
first
hard all, contact at third.
There's no,
you never go.
No like situation where the guy should leave second.
Well, there is.
Well, I mean,
there
if
is.
He
in a rundown, you
if,
do.
If he sprints rundown, to third, yeah, he can.
Yeah, right.
But
once there
like,
was a rundown, he should have just ran all the way to third
yeah,
because the
exactly.
guy between third and home was dead.
Yeah.
So what he needed to do was just run, just keep running, and even if they run back Swanson to third, there's going to be one guy out, but it's better than two. Because
exactly,
Major League Baseball players at this level don't blow pickles. They just don't. They don't. That's what we call them, a pickle, a rundown. And Swanson didn't do a really good job of to extending it to where the guy could get to third, but if Riley just takes off and goes straight to third,
yeah, you
he
gotta,
should be at third.
You
he
have
should
to have
be
a,
running.
You have to make a decision is,
yes.
is basically what I'm saying.
Right, but he shouldn't just stand on second
yeah.
in the rundown. He should be in a situation where he gets to third. And when you get into a rundown in baseball, you are supposed to stay in a rundown as long as you can to get everybody moved up.
Exactly,
it's quite,
yeah.
And so here's the other problem that Riley had that he did. That's the runner at second. Not only did he not get the third, but had he got the third, the guy at first would have been at second. And
mm-hmm.
that's what you do in a rundown. You get everybody as far as they can up the base paths because you know you're a dead duck. So you make that last as long as you can. So there was 3 base running mistakes in this one. There was the one with Swanson going on contact, which was a hard shot right at third, right in front of him. So either the third base coach said, you're going on contact no matter what, which was bad decision, or he went on his own, okay? So he takes off. Then the runner at second doesn't get the third during the rundown, and then because he doesn't get the third, the guy that hit the ball the third, Markakis, is standing on first, and he should be at second.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now it didn't matter because, you know, the next guy got out, except you would have had a runner in scoring position at least. Even with the 2 outs, you should have had a guy at second. You didn't even have that.
Yeah.
So the Braves just completely botched it. And it's one of the worst base running blunders I've seen in a game of that magnitude because not only was it one runner, but you got 2 runners thrown out and the other guy sitting at first. That was the worst possible scenarios, the announcer said, for the Braves and the best possible scenario for the Dodgers. I just can't believe how horrible the base running was in that situation. I mean, it's right in front of you. It is a hot shot, the third. Why do you think you're going to score? You don't move. You freeze. And the guy at second, obviously, he has to freeze. And if a guy from third goes, he should be gone. As soon as he saw the guy go from third, he should have been gone the third.
Yeah.
I mean, just horrible base running. Horrible.
Yeah.
Man, if I'm a Braves fan,
then
I'm screaming.
Because, like, the guy goes from third, and then he knows he's
stuck. And
then
he runs back towards third. He's
got to
run back and forth and kill time.
And so the guy that's coming from second to third thinks he's stuck, and he's not using the same.
No.
He's using the same brain that Dansby Swanson's using.
Yeah,
and he gets stuck, and I'm like, whoa, wait a second.
What are you doing?
At this point, just go back, like you said.
Well, exactly.
Like,
as soon as you hesitate, you go back.
Like, because, like you said, it did not. He got hit on the foot, and it did not last long.
He was out by 10
on that pickle.
Yeah.
So he was done.
Swanson didn't stay in the pickle long enough. And by the way, the Dodgers did a good job of squeezing him in that pickle.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between winning and losing. Yeah. You know, we try to tell our kids that all the time. When, like, in a pickle, you should only make two throws, maybe one. You should only make two. You should, if you make three or more, then it's advantage base runner.
Yeah.
Because now you're taking more chances for a bad throw. In a pickle, you should be able to get a guy out in two throws, two or one throw. Seriously.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and if it takes more than that, then you're probably not doing something right, and the base runner is doing something very, very right, and that is he's prolonging it and allowing everybody else to move up. And in this case, he didn't prolong it as much as he should have, which probably threw the runner off at second.
Yeah.
At the same time, he's just got to get the third. I mean, he just got to take off and go to third. Because, first of all, they're focused on the runner between third and home. They ain't worried about him. So get the third. And once you hesitate, as you said, then you just go back to second. Oh, it's brutal. 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 Wow. Okay, local sports, by the way, the Rays and the Dodgers, game one of the World Series will be tomorrow night in Arlington. They're in Dallas, and then Dallas, Arlington, Fort Worth area. And then they will play the regular schedule to where there will be a couple off days. You know, these AL and NLCSs, they were 7 days in a row, game. The division series were 5 days, five games, which I think is okay. It allows a team with more depth to have a bit of an advantage, and to me, that's, you should have an advantage if you have more depth. You should be allowed that. But it probably, for in regards to the fans' sake and pitching's sake, to see more a better pitching, guys be a little bit rested, would be behoove you to have a day or two off during the World Series, and that's what's going to happen. So Rays and Dodgers, I think, you know, I'm picking the Dodgers to win this thing. I said it before the playoffs, they're the team to beat. I have to tell you what, I was after it was Braves up 2-0, I didn't like the Dodgers' chances at all. But here we are, and I think the Dodgers, with that experience, is gonna pay dividends, and they're going to win this series. But I'm cheering for the Rays. All right, local sports over the weekend, Dusty.
Yeah, Northern Plains League Volleyball Tournament taking place in Tescott, Lincoln, and Sylvan Grove this weekend. Sylvan Lucas went 5-0, and they won their first Northern Plains League tourney title in school history. They're now 32-2 overall. In Pool 1 there in Tescott, they beat Lincoln in 3, Osborne in 2, and St. John's Tipton in 3 before winning over Thunder Ridge in the semis in Tescott in 3, taking the championship over Lakeside 25-19 and 25-14. Lakeside's second place finish was their best in school history at the NPL tournament. In Pool 2, they won all their matches in 2 there at Lincoln over Southern Cloud, Rock Hills, and Thunder Ridge, and they beat St. John's Tipton in 3 in the semifinals before falling to Sylvan Lucas in 2 in the championship. The Lady Knights are now 24-6 on the season after going 4-1 on the day. On Saturday, Thunder Ridge went 3-2. They finished in third place. St. John's Tipton finished in fourth place with a 2-3 record on the weekend. The full results can be found on your favorite school schedule page there at ncksports.com. Also this weekend, the Mid-Continent League Volleyball Tournament Finals at Hoxie. Smith Center finished third out of the three teams in the triangular. They fell to Phillipsburg and TMP in 2, both of those matches. Smith Center is now 28-6, and Phillipsburg beat TMP Marion in 3 sets to win the MCL tournament. Full results for that tournament also online at ncksports.com. Your home for all the local high school sports in North Central Kansas.
Well, congratulations, Sylvan Lucas. Pretty exciting volleyball tournament over the weekend. Sounds like they earned it.
100%.
That's how it should be when you have a tournament of that magnitude. That's pretty awesome. All right, let's see our football schedule. I'm going to go over that coming up on Friday because we got this. Is, believe it or not, we're the final week of the, well, before you're across, before the playoffs, technically, if you don't make the playoffs, you have a ninth game that would be called a regular season game. But in essence, this is the last week of the regular season. We get into the playoffs next week, and there's a lot to be decided, and we got some interesting games coming up Friday.
Yeah, Friday night on Katy Country 94, Bullet Hoisington, pregame coverage, and also online, by the way, at ncksports.com video stream, pregame at 6:30, and kickoff at 7 o'clock, big 2A, or a 2A District 8 game there for Bullet at Hoisington, and looking to maybe bolster their chances to get to the playoffs there for Bullet. And then coming up on Friday night on Z96.3, we have St. John's Tipton taking on Rock Hills in Mankato. And pregame coverage will be at 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock. Blue Jays looking to get a win to keep that chance at home playoff game in the first round there next week. So again, pregame 6:30, kickoff 7 o'clock, Z96.3, St. John's Tipton at Rock Hills. So that's our schedule for Friday night on the radio.
I tell you, this is these districts that we've really been focusing on where we have a lot of our area teams. You've got the eight-man district we've talked about that's been kind of wacky and wild, and we thought it would be. And then if Ellsworth would have won Friday night, Beloit had been in big trouble in regards to even making the playoffs. And if Ellsworth beats Minneapolis this week, which, by the way, I would say is not impossible at all the way Ellsworth's been playing, and I think it's a bit of a dangerous game for Minneapolis after an emotional win over Beloit. And then, you know, Beloit goes to Hoisington and wins. They'll punch their ticket no matter what. But Hoisington's undefeated, and they've been able to wear teams down in the second half. There is a scenario where Beloit, after Friday night, there is a scenario where they would not be in the playoffs. Everybody's just kind of assumed they're going to be in the playoffs, and all of a sudden Ellsworth's gotten a lot better, and Beloit's had some, you know, close game against Minneapolis, you know, up 19, lost by 8, and suddenly you sit here and go, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because I'll tell you what, you look at that other district on the other side of Beloit, Cimarron and TMP are not lights out teams. No. And we saw last year that all four teams of the Beloit district in 3A beat all the other teams in the other district. Number 4, Concordia, went all the way to Hugoton 1 and fairly easily. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get in the playoffs here from this district, which you got Hoisington, Phillipsburg, Minneapolis, Beloit. That's the order right now. Beloit can go to TMP and win. Beloit can go to Cimarron and win, although it looks like Beloit would go to TMP if that's how it works. Mm-hmm. But Beloit's got to first make the playoffs, and they haven't even clinched anything yet. And that's why that I can't figure out that this district either, because, I mean, I'm looking at Norton that was tied with Hoisington at halftime. Hoisington apparently is a second-half team, and they just kind of sleepwalked through the first half. But Norton was tied with Hoisington. Phillipsburg is up on Hoisington. Minneapolis down 1 at halftime to Hoisington.
I thought it was 1 point with Minneapolis.
And in the second half, Hoisington doesn't give up any points. They just shut you down, and they wear you out, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then Ellsworth almost beats Phillipsburg. I mean, what happens if Norton beats Phillipsburg this weekend? I got to look at that scenario. Because in Minneapolis could, if they beat Ellsworth, I think Phillipsburg still be solid at 2, though, because they'd have the head-to-head against Phillipsburg.
Against Minneapolis.
Phillipsburg have the head-to-head against Minneapolis. So, and then, of course, there's the Beloit-Norton game that wasn't played, which will prevent some tiebreakers from happening in some situations. So, it's just crazy. And then you look at the 8-man. I mean, for crying out loud, you know, Lakeside probably going to be a 4 now instead of being a 1. St. John's Tipton could still be a 1, or they could be a 2, right?
It would take an upset of Pike Valley beating Osborne for St. John's Tipton to get the 1.
Right, but if St. John's Tipton loses to Rock Hills,
then they could move down and Thunder Ridge jumps.
They could jump. And
because
you have a 3-way tie.
Yeah, actually, St. John's Tipton with a loss would actually still be in the 2 spot now that I think about it.
With 2 losses,
they have wins over both Thunder Ridge and Lakeside, who would have 2 losses.
So they're in pretty good.
So Thunder Ridge is, or St. John's Tipton, excuse me, probably second unless Osborne would lose to Pike Valley.
And then St. John's could move up to 1.
But they're in pretty good position, it looks like, right now to be having home playoffs.
That's right.
But you want to go out there and win no matter what, just to make sure. You don't want to risk any points or anything coming into play there on that. So.
No doubt. Man, it's crazy stuff.
It's wild. Like, 1 week we think we have it figured out. And the next week you think, nope. And then now Osborne's sitting here like, oh, we're in prime position now to win the district.
Yeah, and had a week
with
week
an early
off,
loss. Yeah,
they can relax a little bit and get ready for their final game and then go into the playoffs. Yeah, pretty crazy stuff. The Chiefs and the Bills today, 4:00 Monday afternoon football. COVID-19. What it does to 2020.
Yes.
But at least we got football. No fans. And Andy Reid talks about the advantages of going on the road and not have to deal with a hostile environment.
I mean, you know, with the snap count, that part of it, obviously it helps. You don't have to use a silent count. You can use your snap count. Other than that, I mean, it's two good teams playing each other, and we've had that on the road so far. So it's, you know, they get after each other just like they do if they're fans there. But obviously it's not as loud for the visiting team.
Josh Allen's played really well this year, although not so well last week against Tennessee with a couple of interceptions, but he has improved so much from a year ago. He can beat you with his legs. He does have probably the strongest arm in the National Football League. And before Chiefs fans go, the horror of it all, you can't say that. Mahomes has the best arm of all time. Honestly, Josh Allen has a stronger arm only because we're talking about he can throw at 83 yards and Mahomes 81. Which really, at the end of the day, who cares? You know, I mean, who has the Super Bowl MVP and who has the ring? That'd be Mahomes. But the Bills do have a good defense. They aren't great running the ball. Actually, Allen's probably their best threat to run the ball, which that could bode well for the Chiefs today because the Bills aren't great at running the football, and the Chiefs are a little vulnerable there. Here's Andy Reid on Josh Allen and how he has progressed.
He's playing tremendous football. He's gotten better every year he's been playing. I believe this is his third year starting, so he's he just has a pretty good grasp of that offense and does a great job. So people question his accuracy. He's an accurate thrower, and we see that play after play. So consistency ends up being that, and he's done that this year.
We know the Chiefs defense didn't play that well against the Raiders, gave up some huge chunks of yardage and big plays. Steve Spagnuolo, defensive coordinator, two-time Super Bowl winning defensive coordinator, shares with us the focus this week.
I love this group. There's a lot of character here. There's a lot of pride here. And nobody feels worse about it than the players that were out there playing. We had a walkthrough. It's a 30-minute walkthrough that I thought it was the best we've had in a year and a half that we've been here. So I've never questioned the guy's effort. I've never questioned the preparation. We just got to go out there and make sure that we do things that we have executed during the week and just do them really well.
There's Spags on Josh Allen, and also they have a very talented wide receiver they picked up in a trade with the Vikings, Stephon Diggs.
I mean, look, it's obviously this chemistry there, instant, you know, because they really haven't been together a long time, didn't have the offseason. You'd think it'd be a little, but they came right out of the blocks, and obviously it's because you got a real good talented quarterback, and he's obviously a talented receiver, but it's impressive to me. It really is.
Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator for the Chiefs. His team, well, he talks about how it's just really nice to get right back out there and try to get back on track.
You always relish that opportunity. Anytime you come off a tough loss, the first thing that you want to do, you want the opportunity to go back the next day. You wish that you can just line up on a Tuesday and just go out there and play after watching all the mistakes that we made and the things that we didn't do. So when it's all said and done, with the good thing is that we have time in between to clean up the mistakes, making sure as a coaching staff that we're addressing the things that need to be addressed and that we're doing our part as well and making sure that our guys can go out and play up to the level that we expect them to play at.
Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes all ready for the challenge today.
I think it's always awesome to go against a great opponent, going against the Buffalo Bills. I mean, they have a great defense. They have a great offense, great special teams, just an overall great team. And so anytime you get to play on these games, Monday evening, night, whatever it is, and you get to go up against a great opponent, it's always an exciting challenge, and I'm ready for it.
And what about that 4 o'clock start, Patrick?
Hopefully people are able to watch it whenever they get off work and everything like that. But for me, it's just like any other football game. We understood the challenges coming into this season and had to be able to expect the unexpected. And it's going to be a Monday game, which will be our third Monday game in 4 weeks or whatever it is. And so we're excited for the opportunity to get to play in front of everybody and get to play against a great football team.
All right, let's update you on the injury report for the Chiefs and the Bills today. 4 o'clock, pregame at 3 o'clock on Z96.3 The Lake. You're home for the Chiefs in North Central Kansas. Anthony Hitchin, a full participant after being ill earlier in the week. Of course, Asimile out. He should be out for the year. Torn tendons of both knees. I don't know how you come back from that in one year. Sammy Watkins out with a hamstring. That does hurt this Chiefs offense. Of course, Le'Veon Bell, that Chiefs picked up, is not able to play today. He's got to clear all the protocols with COVID and has to be negative for 5 days and this and that before he can report. Rashad Fenton with a shoulder. Eric Fisher, a shoulder. Mecole Hardman, an ankle. Tyreek Hill, a heel. Chris Jones, the groin. Nick Kizer, a shoulder. Tight end. Derek Nnadi, ankle. Austin Ryder, knee. Travarius Ward, hand. And Mitchell Schwartz, back. All of those guys... full participants at practice yesterday and good to go, although Schwartz with the back is listed as questionable, and that would be a big blow for the Chiefs if he can't go against that Bills defense. The Chiefs offensive line already has problems and doesn't seem to have a lot of quality depth, at least so far that we've seen. So yikes if Schwartz can't go, and maybe that's why he hasn't played as well this year, because he's been fighting through that. And if you're any kind of lineman and you have a back issue, that can't be fun. I mean, I tweaked my back and I had to see my buddy TJ because I messed my back up on Friday, and I'm 44, and I don't try to, you know, get low center of gravity, low
hand
winds. It's
like you need leverage if you don't have a back that's working. Yeah. I wouldn't think anyway.
Yeah, I know. That's got to be tough.
Yeah.
So the Chiefs and the Bills, you know, I think the Chiefs are going to bounce back. They're a 5.5-point favorite. I do like the fact that the Chiefs have more time to prepare for this game. If this game was a Thursday night, I would have picked the Bills to win, I think. But the Bills had to play a Tuesday, had to travel to Tennessee, now back home. The Chiefs had more time to prepare. The Bills not as much to prepare. I do know that one of these teams is going to be on two-game losing streak coming out of it. Prime time with Mahomes, typically the Chiefs play well. I think the Chiefs' defense was embarrassed. I think they'll play better tonight. I think they're going to give some looks at Josh Allen that he hasn't seen, perhaps. And they're going to bring some pressure. So am I concerned about this game? Yeah, I am. I think the Bills are really good. I think the Bills are legit. They just didn't play well last game, just like the Chiefs. But it is in Buffalo. Chiefs have never had much success playing games in Buffalo over the years. Mm-hmm. But they haven't played there in quite some time. But they do have 15. I think the defense will be better. I am concerned with the offensive line. Major concern tonight with the offensive line, with Schwartz at right tackle now with the back. And then I'm worried also about not having Watkins on offense. He's more important in this offense than people understand or realize, mainly just because he can open up the field underneath a little bit with his speed and be in possession receiver. So that means you can maybe double Kelce. And then you take away Kelce and you play your safeties back. Now the Chiefs got to be more patient offensively. And when that happens, you got to run more plays. And the more plays you run, that means the offensive line's got to hold up longer by defending and supporting and protecting your quarterback for more plays. So from that scenario, I start to talk to myself here and say, bye, I don't know. But I'll go with the Chiefs. I'll say the Chiefs find a way. It's hard to bet against Mahomes in this situation, especially coming off a loss. I'll go Chiefs, but I don't know if they'll cover that spread, 5.5. I think it's going to be a tight, tight game. But I'll take the Chiefs to win. Maybe the biggest reason is that they've had more time to prep for this game and get ready, and they've had a chance to heal up in some areas on this team. And they were embarrassed last week, and Super Bowl champions are certainly motivated to show everybody that was a fluke. So I'm going to go with the Chiefs.
Bounce back week for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I'm going to pick them to cover, too.
Okay.
Let's All right. do it.
Okay. That sounds good. Chiefs-Bills today, 3 o'clock pregame, 4 o'clock live play-by-play on the Chiefs Radio Network, your home of the Chiefs, North Central Kansas, our sister station, Z96.3. The Lake. The NFL from yesterday, some interesting games. The Bears are 5-1. The Bears are not a sexy 5-1 team, but they're 5-1 as they're 3-0 on the road for the first time since 06. They beat the Panthers 23-16, snapping the Panthers' three-game winning streak. The Colts were down 21-0, came back and won over the Bengals 31-27. Colts now 4-2 in the AFC. Lions improved to 2-3, took care of the Jaguars 34-16. What's wrong with the Vikings? They're supposed to be maybe win the division, went to the NFL NFC divisional game last year before losing in San Francisco, and this year they're 1-5. The Falcons beat them 40-23. The Giants beat the Washington football team 20-19. Ron Rivera, head coach of the Washington football team, went for 2 in the win, which I like. When you're 1-4, why not? They went for the win, didn't work out. Two-point conversion failed. 20-19, the final Giants win there. Both teams are 1-5. First win of the year for the Giants. The Ravens survive a rally by the Eagles and Carson Wentz. Ravens win 30-28. Eagles' two-point play was a very questionable play call and what they were running against that defense. They had a timeout. They could have called it. They didn't. But yet the Ravens almost blew it. Ravens now 5-1. They beat the Eagles 30-28. The Browns proved that they're not ready to be a contender really yet, as the Steelers took it to them 38-7 yesterday. Steelers 5-0 for the second time in franchise history. As the Steelers roll the Browns, they're still undefeated. Titans are still undefeated. I want to talk about this one for a moment because this is very interesting what Romeo Crennel did. And I'm going to be maybe in the minority on this one, but I'm going to tell you why what he did made sense. And I thought Rich Gannon went a little way too far, basically calling Romeo Crennel a stooge. I mean, that's basically what he said. And Rich Gannon needs to open up his eyes to understand that the league isn't what it once was once he played. And he was ripping the computer geeks, and he was ripping the people with analytics. And I think it's pretty simple. Rich Gannon's not smart enough to get analytics. Sorry, Rich, but I think that was the way it was. He was too stubborn. He's too old school to realize there's some merit in what Romeo Crennel was doing. And I'll explain it here in a moment, and I wish Rich Gannon was listening to our show so he could understand. So the Titans beat the Texans yesterday 42-36, and let's set this up. The Texans, first of all, Romeo Crennel should get some credit. Last week he went for it on a fourth down situation. They went for two, and it worked out, and they won. So Romeo Crennel, you know, he is being very aggressive. He's an interim coach. He's got nothing really to lose. He's been a coach for years. I don't think he's really pining to be the head coach of the Texans for the next 5 years.
No.
So he can do it any which way he wants. And so I like that. And plus, they're, you know, losing record. They got to do something to win games. And so yesterday, the Texans, and nobody's talking about this. See, everybody wants to, this is the horrible part about being a coach. You don't get credit for making the right decisions because they remember the last decision. And if the last decision is wrong, or people think it's wrong, you get vilified. And then you're treated like you're a stooge. So yesterday in this game, the Texans were, they were up 29 to 28. And the Texans had a fourth and goal at the one. They could have kicked the field goal and went up four. And a lot of people would have told you that's what they should have done. And you know what they did? They went for it. And if you not gotten it, well, Crennel's a stooge. Should have kicked the field goal, go up four. Why didn't he do that? With about 3 minutes to go. Instead, he went for it. Guess what? Touchdown. Doesn't get credit for that. So they get the touchdown. So now they're up 36-29. So people think, well, you kick the extra point. You go up 8. So now you can't possibly lose in regulation, but you could still go to overtime. Or you could go for 2 and finish it. And the way the Texans defense was playing yesterday, it was actually made some sense by Romeo Crennel to go for it. And here's the thing. The receiver was wide open on the 2-point play. Wide open. Problem was, a defensive player got his hand up and batted the ball down. Made a play. It was wide open. They had the right play call. They went for 2. They liked their play call. And a Tennessee Titan made the play. The problem with the Texans was not Romeo Crennel. The problem was their defense. And the fact that he did what he did tells you he didn't trust his defense. Mm-hmm. And guess what? He was right to think that. Because then the Titans, Derrick Henry ran for over 200 yards in this game. 10 yards a carry. Had a 94-yard touchdown run. So the Titans get the ball back. They go down the field, and they score a touchdown. So now they're down 36-35. You follow me? Okay?
Yes.
Okay, because the Texans were up, it was, I said 29-28. It had to be 30-28, wasn't it? No, it was 30-29. That's right. I had it wrong. It was 30-29.
Yeah.
And the Texans scored the touchdown, went for it on 4th and goal. That made it 36-29. Mm-hmm. And then they went for 2 and didn't get it. So it's a 7-point game. Titans go down. They scored the touchdown with 4 seconds remaining. And so now they're down 1. They could have gone for 2 in the win, but they chose to go for the 1. They got the extra point. They tied it. Then they went to overtime. Deshaun Watson's captain for the Texans. They flipped the coin for overtime. We know how this works, right, Chiefs fans? So they flipped the coin, yes. And guess who wins the coin toss? The Titans, who absolutely are running all over the Texans' defense. And Deshaun Watson, his reaction, you just knew right then and there. He didn't trust the defense either. Did you see his reaction? Oh, man.
Yeah.
He knew the game was over on that coin toss. They had to get the coin toss. And the Texans didn't win it. The Titans got the ball, went right down the field and scored, and won the game 42-36. Now, here's the thing I hear people saying. Well, you're up 7, Rich Gannon. You're up 7. You automatically kick the extra point. Everybody's got this card in their back pocket. And so you kick the extra point, you go up 8. Now the Titans got to get a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. Let me ask you a question. If the Texans kick the extra point and go up 8, as Rich Gannon says, the Titans were able to score from wherever they wanted on the field. You don't think they can get a 2-point conversion from 3 yards out to tie the game? Because that's the scenario. So what Romeo Crennel was saying is, I don't trust my defense to stop a touchdown drive, and I don't trust them to stop a 2. So I'm going to go up 9, and then they can't catch me. I thought it made sense. And
sure.
And Rich Gannon, I thought, was way over the top in his criticism of it. And this is where the old school versus the new school.
Mm-hmm.
You have a chance to win the game. How many times do you hear 4th and 1, 4th and inches? People go, well, just go for it. You finish it. Instead of punting, you go for it. Anthony Lynn, are you listening to me? 4th and 1 of your own 34 against Patrick Mahomes in overtime, you go for it. And what'd he do? He played the old school way, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And what happened? He lost.
Did not work out.
Did not work out. So Romeo Crennel does the new school way, and a defensive player makes a play for the Titans, and his defense can't stop anything, and it's his fault because they went for 2. They're still up 7. They're playing with house money, in my opinion. You're up 7, so you go ahead and go for 2. Well, could you go for 1 and be up 8? Yes. But here's the thing. If we don't know what the Titans would have run on a 2-point try, but the way the Titans were moving the ball, there's no doubt in my mind that even if the Texans kicked the extra point, went up 8, the Titans were going to go down, score, and get the 2, go to overtime, and win the coin flip, and win it anyway. So, in my opinion, what Romeo Crennel did, honestly, didn't change the outcome of the game at all. Because I think the Titans go down, score the touchdown, the 2 anyway, and they win in overtime anyway. So the only way it can be changed, the outcome of the game, is go for 2 and go up 9. And that's what he did, and it didn't work out. I thought it was, honestly, I love the call. I love the call.
Oh, yeah.
Because, if his defense had been playing well, then I'd question it a little bit. But his defense was not playing well. You know, I mean, yards they gave up yesterday, almost 600. Why would you not go for the kill shot in the win to go up 9? It's the same thing as going for it 4th and inches with under 2 minutes to play instead of punting. It really is. It's a kill shot. That's what you're doing there, trying to go for 2. Now, granted, it's, 3 yards away on a 2-point try. But still, you got one of the most dynamic quarterbacks in the National Football League. Why not? Put it in his hands instead of a kicker. And by the way, here's another thing I need to throw out here. Everybody assumes the extra points are automatic. Have we watched lately?
There have
been a ton of missed extra points.
3 games in a row missed an extra point.
Butker's one of the best kickers in football. He's missed extra points. Did you see Gostkowski yesterday? He had a 27-yarder blocked for the Titans. So there's no, in fairness to Romeo Crennel, there's no guarantee you're making a 33-yard extra point. It's not a 20-yarder anymore. So that's another thing that I wish Greg Gumbel, Greg Gumbel needs to quit. Greg Gumbel, he called what was it, Lamar Jackson, Lamar Murray, and he called Kyler Murray Kyler Jackson or something recently. I mean, he was all off. I mean, and they didn't fix it for a quarter, which didn't you think your color guy would tell him, dude, you got the name wrong multiple times?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know if it was, I can't remember if it was Lamar. I think it was Lamar Murray, I think is what he said. I don't know for sure. Maybe it was Kyler Jackson. Whatever. Todd sent me that. Greg Gumbel didn't even say anything back. Like, actually talk this out a little bit. Because why don't you say, well, Rich, what about the flip side, though? The extra point isn't a guarantee. We've seen a 27-yard field goal that's blocked. Instead, you just let Rich Gannon go nuts because it didn't work. But if it did work, would Gannon have said the same thing? Of course not.
No.
Of course not. And Cornell would be a genius being aggressive. And I think more teams need to do that. You're up 7. Go for the kill shot. You go up 9.
Oh, and I think more teams than you would imagine would do that right now
too.
In this day and age.
So Cornell gets all this
especially
heat,
with all the
but
scenario.
A lot of coaches would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if it was 2 years ago, Chiefs-Patriots, Chiefs had a chance to go up 9 instead of 8. I'll bet AD would have went for 2.
I think he should.
Just the way his defense was playing in that scenario and how he felt about going against that team. Because you have the 7 points, right?
Yes.
So, again,
you put some pressure on them. Technically, you give yourself a chance to lose, though, because they could go for 2 and beat you. That's the only thing.
That's the only bad thing, yeah. Right. But if you say it the same way on the other side of that coin, though, is like you've got the 7-point lead, right? We've already established that extra points aren't automatic.
Right.
So you've already got the 7-point lead. You've got the advantage right there of 7.
Right.
To where they still have to go make the extra point no matter what it is.
Exactly.
Whether they go make the kick or whether they go for 2.
You're right.
They still need to get that to even tie you or if they want to try to beat you. They're still down a point after they score the touchdown.
Right.
And so I don't have a problem with that at all, especially if you understand the Titans had, like you said, about 600 yards against this defense. 2's just as easy as 1 to get against that, right?
Yeah.
The way the game's going.
Absolutely.
So, no, I think a lot of coaches, if they understand the scenario and situation,
how
this game's going, would have done the exact same thing.
See, and that's the thing I don't like about Rich Gannon, and I think he's a good analyst, don't get me wrong. I'm picking on him a little bit, but he watched the whole game.
Yeah.
And he should know they can't stop anybody, and that's why Cornell did it. And after the game, J.J. Watt was asked about, well, do you think Roman going for 2 showed that he didn't have confidence in the defense? And J.J. Watt goes, that's above my pay grade. Oh, come on. You guys didn't get the job done.
Yeah.
Be a leader. J.J. Watt's a good leader, usually.
It.
What he needs to say is, listen, if we did our job, he wouldn't have had to go for 2. You know, support your coach.
Yeah.
You know, you just blew out your coach because you didn't support him, Bill O'Brien, which I understand because he made a lot of big mistakes.
Yeah.
But now you got an interim coach that you apparently don't, I mean, you play hard for. But, I mean, that's where J.J. Watt, I think, could have sent a message to his whole team and said, listen, this is unacceptable. We got
to
be better.
Yeah.
The reason my coach went for it is I love he went for it because we weren't getting the job done, and he proved to be right because we didn't get the job done. So had we been doing our job, he would have kicked an extra point. That's what I would like J.J. Watt to say.
Yeah.
He didn't take responsibility, which is surprising to me. Because the Texans defense was abysmal yesterday. Horrible. I mean, Derrick Henry averaged 10 yards a carry. That was like the Chiefs defense against the Titans in November of last year. So if your defense is playing well, then no, you probably don't go for the 2 and go for the kill shot. You're up 8, you take your chances because you can stop them on a drive or you stop them on one play. But when your defense is playing that horrible and that poorly, then it makes sense to be aggressive.
16-9 instead of 36-29.
Right.
Yeah. Kick the extra point.
What would you rather do? Have your offense win it or pray your defense somehow miraculously makes a stop? Chiefs fans, we know how that all works. We've seen that for a long time with Bob Sutton as defensive coordinator. So, yes, I thought Roman Cornell made the right decision. It just didn't work. You know, that's the thing we caught up in. Like, well, if it works, you're a genius. If it doesn't, like, I know of a high school football coach that went for a play, 4th down and 1 at his own 11. Okay? People probably know that story.
Yeah.
Now, listen, if they don't get that fourth down and one at their own 11, odds are that coach is going to be obviously second-guessed a ton. They didn't get it. Then they get an 89-yard touchdown run on 4th and 1 and looks like a complete genius. But it wasn't designed to get 89 yards. It was designed to get 1 yard.
Yeah.
Okay, it was a fullback run by Robert Ludwig. So does that make, no offense to Coach Koenig, but does that make him a genius because they ran 89 yards for a touchdown? Is it still the right decision? I mean, you can argue, you can say after the fact, since you know the result, well, clearly it was the right decision.
Yeah.
But really, was it the right decision? I mean, really, was it the right decision? And you can say, yes, it worked out, and they won the game, and it was a huge play. Yes, correct. But still, is it really the right decision? Had he gone for it fourth and one at the Norton three and didn't get it, and Norton goes 98 yards and score, you know what people would say? Well, maybe you should have kicked a field goal or something weird like that.
Yeah.
Which that bully didn't kick, by the way. But let's just say hypothetically they did. And that's where you say, well, listen, most people would have said you go for it on fourth and one at the two, right?
Yeah.
Instead of settle for three. Let's not do the revisionist history. When it's happening, let's say any team. It doesn't have to be, you know, what that was back then. Let's just go through it. If you have a fourth down and one inside the five, okay, fourth down and one inside the five, and it depends on the situation, but let's just say fourth down and one in the third quarter, because that's what happened in that Beloit game. Fourth down and one in the third quarter at the five, you have a field goal kicker, all right, no matter what level of football it is. Fourth down and one inside the five, and you are a good running football team. Your offense is better than your defense. Fourth down and one at the five, and you go for it. Most people are going to say go for it.
Yeah.
And if you don't get it, then people are going to go, well, why didn't you kick the field goal?
Should have kicked.
Right. But let's be honest. Let's just take it from where it is before the play happens. If it's fourth down and one inside the opposing team's five, most people are going to say go for it. If it's fourth down and one at your own 11, what are most people going to say?
Punt.
Punt! Punt the ball! So, once again...
Most people aren't even going to think about
it. No, they're not even going to... Right. That's my point.
Yeah.
So, when you go for it on fourth and one inside the five, you don't make it, and then people after the fact go, well, I should have kicked the field goal. You weren't saying that initially, probably. Maybe you were. Fourth down and one at your own 11, I'm pretty sure most people in the stands weren't wanting... I think most people are like, whoa, what if we don't get this? Thinking negatively. What if we don't get it? Whereas when you're fourth and one inside the five, you think positively, well, we're going to get it and score, you know? But it's kind of the same play. In defense of Greg Koenig, if you believe, and he told me this before. He goes, if you believe you can get fourth down and one at the inside the five, why can't you get fourth down and one at your own 11? And it's a good point. Mm-hmm. If you are a running football team, you're a physical team, like for the Titans, you have Derrick Henry. If I'm the Titans, every time it's fourth and one, I should go for it. I have Derrick Henry. I mean, really, if I go for it, I'm going to get it 60% of the time or more with Derrick Henry on fourth and one, more than likely. Remember Marcus Allen back in the day? He was short yardage back. He wasn't super physical, but he always found a way to get that 1 yard for a touchdown. He was just automatic. He always knew a way to get there, and that's what Le'Veon Bell might provide for the Chiefs now that they picked him up. But it is interesting because it is all about perspective, isn't it? Fourth down and one inside the five. Well, you go for it. Fourth down and one at your own 11. Oh, God, you punt it. It's the same yardage.
Yeah.
And, in fact, you got more field to use as an offensive team. Fourth and one inside the five is more compact. Players can come up and run support because you don't have to defend deep down the field or worry about a play action deep. So when you really start thinking about it, fourth and one at your own 11, that seems crazy. But if you feel like you can get fourth and one no matter where you are on the field, then why not? And it worked for Beloit that year in the playoffs in 2010.
Yeah.
And if you're Romeo Cannell and going, listen, I got nothing to lose. And my team, my strength is my quarterback. I'm going to put the ball in his hands to finish this game instead of leaving it in the hands of J.J. Watt and this defense that's been abysmal. Well, it's a no-brainer. Let Deshaun go win it.
Yeah.
Instead of letting a kicker miss an extra point, which he may have made it, but he's still only up eight, I'm going to let my quarterback. And what I like about the play call that they made was Watson was able to either run or throw, and he chose to throw, and the guy was wide open, and the defensive guy got his hand up and knocked it down. I'm all for that. If you're going to try to win a game on a play, finish a game, whether it's fourth and one to milk the clock and finish it without punting, or if it's fourth and are you going for two to make it a 9-point game like Romeo Cannell yesterday, then you sure as heck, if you're going to have a play call, it better be in the hands of your best player. That's what infuriates me about Andy Reid at times. Fourth down and one, we hand it off to Darwin Thompson. Fourth down and one, we hand it off to Anthony Sherman. Here's a thought. We've got a guy named 15. His name's Mahomes, who can bootleg, who can run, who can throw. He can throw left-handed behind his back. No look. He can run. I know we can't quarterback a sneak it because we're freaked out, Kansas City, that he'll, you know, dislocate his knee, which was a freak injury that hardly ever happens. So we need to get past that, by the way.
Yes.
Because it does take away a weapon on a quarterback sneak. I saw it the other night in a high school game. Fourth down and inches, to me, it should be a quarterback sneak every time. Oh, why take a chance 100%. Turning and making your running back get 5 yards when the guy can get penetration?
Why make it fourth and three instead of fourth and inches?
If it's third and inches, I'm quarterback sneaking. If it's anything inches on third or fourth and inches, I'm quarterback sneaking.
Yeah.
Especially if I like my offensive line in the middle. I'm sneaking because, one, I just got to get the snap and go before the defense can react. I'm going for that. Now, third and inches, if I know I'm going for it on fourth and inches, if I don't get it, I might go third and inches, take a shot. take a shot. They're expecting everybody up front. Take the shot deep. You get it. You don't. Okay, I'm going to get it anyway because I got 4th and inches and my quarterback isn't going to mess this up. Now, where you can mess it up, don't get the snap, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know why more teams don't use quarterback sneak. Tom Brady's used his whole career. I don't know how many first downs he's picked up on quarterback sneaks. You can't defend it. And so because of a freak injury in Denver, the Chiefs don't have that in the playbook anymore, apparently. Which I'm not saying they should use it in the regular season. I'm okay saving it for a big playoff game or a Super Bowl. But please don't get to a Super Bowl this year and go, well, we had 4th and inches. We hand off to the sausage. Why'd you do that? Well, we didn't want Mahomes to get hurt. It's a Super Bowl. I don't care. Let's go win it.
The wild thing about it to me is the fact that they won't run the quarterback sneak, right, is Mahomes will be, like, scrambling and will go for the extra yard to get the first down, no matter what.
Which is probably more dangerous.
Exactly. I'm like, you're more likely to get hit the wrong way in the head, a concussion, hit the wrong way as you're sliding down.
Get pulled down like Dak Prescott, broke your ankle.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't understand how they don't, like, corral him and tell him, don't do that, slide no matter what.
Yeah.
But they won't run a quarterback sneak with
it. It is interesting, isn't it?
I'm like, this guy doesn't care. I know Mahomes doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, if he says, hey, we're running a quarterback sneak, let's run a quarterback sneak, right?
Yeah.
Because he's going to do what they tell him to do and what's ever going to be best to help the team win. And obviously that's getting first downs on 4th and inches and keeping your drives alive. Yeah. But I agree with you, man. The only route and option to throw the ball to is Blake Bell. Last year, was that Tennessee?
That was the Tennessee game.
And so that's the only option to throw the ball to is Blake Bell on 4th down. You're right. There's some plays where, you know, he's a wizard offensively, but it's like,
he's not great.
What
in
is
fourth,
that?
He's not great in 4th and short.
Yeah.
No, maybe Le'Veon Bell will help with that. So the Titans win, stay undefeated. Like I said, I support Romeo Crennel, and I support coaches that are aggressive and go for that type of stuff. Buccaneers beat the Packers 38-10. That was a weird game. Packers up 10-0 in control, and then Rodgers threw a pick six, and the game completely changed.
Yes.
And the Buccaneers blew them out, scored 28 in the second quarter. Packers no longer undefeated. And the Bucs are getting better. And they, you know, after they lost week one, people were like, oh, Brady's washed up, he's old. And I kept telling people, listen, let him learn the system, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Could you let him get used to his players? Because there was no preseason. That's another thing to keep in mind. The Niners looked good last night. 24-16 over the Rams, and the Niners needed that win badly because they got a tough schedule coming up. Rams are 4-2. Broncos beat the Patriots 18-12. I want to talk about this one for a moment. The Patriots, first of all, the Broncos had 6 field goals. That's it. And Drew Locke was back at quarterback. The Patriots, Cam Newton was back. The Patriots looked extremely rusty, like you would when you only had a practice or two the last couple of weeks because of all the COVID stuff. And the Patriots are out of sync, and the Broncos give them credit. The defense played well or well enough. The Patriots don't have anybody other than Julian Edelman to throw the football to, so that makes them easier to defend. But what I want to talk about this game is we talk about coaches getting criticized, and once again, this will be – I'm sure he's getting criticized for a little bit, but his team won, so we can skirt past it. What Vic Fangio and the Broncos did in this game in the final 3.5 minutes is worse than anything Romeo Crennel did. I mean, the Broncos, it was 3.5 minutes ago. The Patriots couldn't do anything offensively. I mean, they had just scored a touchdown, granted, but that was off of a pick that Locke had just thrown. Drew Locke had just thrown an interception, a bad pass. Him and his receiver on the same page on the far sideline. Patriots returned it, and I think, the 20, and they scored. They had the short field, right? So it was the only touchdown they got. And then the Patriots, for some dumb reason, they decided to I didn't understand. It's 18-9. You're down 9. They went for 2. There was 8 minutes to go. They went for 2.
Yeah, that's...
I was like, now, if there was a quarter and a half to go, I maybe get it. You get as many points as you can. But, so now you go for 2. A 1 would make it an 8-point game.
Yeah.
You're within a score with 8.5 to go and a 2-point conversion. They went for 2, didn't get it. But then, like I said, they had the turnover, the interception by Locke, and then the Patriots got a field goal. So it was 18-12. So it's 3.5 minutes to go, and Trent Green was the color analyst, I believe. And he says, listen, this is pretty simple. Lindsey's been around the ball pretty well. You run the football, and you play it somewhat safe here, but your defense has played well. This is the opposite of what Romeo Crennel was dealing with, okay? Mm-hmm. Vic Fangio, who's a defensive mind, former defensive coordinator of the Bears, is the head coach. So you trust your defense, right?
Nope.
Drew Locke just threw a pick, and you heave it deep down the middle of the field in double coverage, and it's picked again. So now the Patriots get the ball, and I'm like, what are the Broncos doing? I know Bronco fans didn't understand it. And so, luckily for the Broncos, the Patriots drive stalled out after the interception. They had a couple trick plays, got down to the Denver 25. So they came close to winning this game. It should have never come to that.
No.
Why are you, and plus, your young quarterback had just thrown a really bad pick. And the very next play, they take a shot deep down the field, and it was a reckless throw in a double coverage, and it's picked off. Yet, today, do you hear the horrible outrage towards Vic Fangio and the Broncos for that horrible, horrible decision? No, because they found a way to win despite that horrible decision and bad throw. Had they lost, they'd be catching all kinds of heat. I thought Vance Joseph became the head coach of the Broncos. I was like, what in the world are they doing? And this is coming from a defensive-minded coach. Very weird. Now, granted, the offensive coordinator probably made the play call or whatever, or Locke decided to just be reckless. And then Romer Cannell does what he does, doesn't have much of a defense, and he gets ripped because they lost. That's the difference.
It's like every time I see that, I just want to be like Leanne Tui in The Blind Side. Run the dang ball.
Yes. I mean, know what's going. Your defense is playing great the whole game. The Patriots don't have any weapons to beat you. And you've been running the ball well, and you decide on first down and 10 with 3.5 minutes to go. Not only, I mean, it's one thing to throw a pass, throw a safe swing pass. You throw a deep down the middle of the field in double coverage. I mean, that's a horrible decision by Locke and horrible decision by the Broncos to do what they did. And maybe now they'll understand, I can't trust this young quarterback in that situation. Wow. The Jets are the only winless team in the NFL. They're going to get Trevor Lawrence the way it's going. They need him. Dolphins beat the Jets 24-0.
Trevor Lawrence trying to figure out a way to get out of that right now, like today.
Yeah, absolutely. Come back another year, he could do that.
Yeah.
That'd be way out of it. Chargers, Raiders, Seahawks, Saints all had byes. Monday night football, we talk about the Chiefs Bills, Monday afternoon football at 4 o'clock. Cardinals, Cowboys tonight at 7:15 on ESPN. Could be an interesting matchup. Cowboys, of course, without Dak Prescott. Andy Dalton, quarterback for the Cowboys, has lost four straight games on Monday night. But he doesn't play for the Bengals anymore, so maybe that'll change things for what used to be America's team. That's what I'm going to call it. They're not America's team anymore. Stop it. I'm an American. They're not my team.
Nobody's America's team.
There you
go. There's TVs everywhere now, so.
Right. I agree.
It's not like this is the only team we can watch anymore.
College football over the weekend. How about those Jayhawks, baby?
From the pistol, fake to Puka Williams, going deep, has a man, right sideline, deflected, caught, touchdown! Deflected and caught by Andrew Parchment. A 43-yard touchdown, no flags, and Kansas is an extra point away from a 10-0 lead on the road.
And that would be it. Now, let's go through a couple things in this game here. First of all, that was Jimmy Chavez on the call, filling in Brian Haney, because Brian didn't have COVID, can't go to the game. Les Miles did, but could, but chose not to at the last minute, which, based on how bad this team is, it's probably smart by Les to stay home and still get paid. 10-0 KU on that play, pure luck.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, that was a bad throw. It wasn't even a great throw by Miles Kendrick. It was deflected. DB should have picked it. So that was a gift touchdown. So it's 10-0. And you knew, I mean, as a KU fan, you know, that, well, this is what we've done the last few times after, you know, getting blown out to start games. Now suddenly get early leads and it's not going to last. And it didn't. West Virginia, 38 unanswered points. What was it? I forgot what it was. In the second half, I think West Virginia had more first downs than KU had yards of offense. It was something like that. It was really, really bad.
It could have been. Once the numbers are so bad, I kind of just stop.
Yeah.
At whatever point when I'm like recapping in my sports cast, I'm like, I don't want to go any further. This is bad enough.
So here's what I want to touch upon with KU. Let me see if I can find the numbers here, because I'm sure it's somewhere. KU had 157 yards. Oh, there we go. 17 yards in the second half. KU had 17 yards in the second half. All right. So, first of all, Max is a big KU fan, and he sent me a text. He goes, you guys really should mention something about KU needing a quarterback. He was being sarcastic because we talk about it all the time. And I said, does Reesing have any eligibility left? Because that was the last quarterback. Honestly, Carter Stanley looks tremendous compared to the guys they have right now. He at least could make some plays down the field. Here's the analogy I came up with last night. I was laying in bed, and I was thinking about how bad KU football is. It's not fair. It's not a fair fight. It's a gunfight. You ready for this? It's a gunfight. And you got KU, Mr. Jayhawk, down the middle of that dirt road. You've seen the scene in the old Wild West with the gunfight, right? So the guy that the Jayhawks are going against has a loaded gun. I mean, it's just a solid regular. It's just a regular gun. He's got a gun, and KU. They take their steps and they turn and they point their weapon and it's a pencil that hasn't been sharpened yet. That's their weapon. They don't even have a sharpened pencil. They can't even get a pencil sharpened so that somehow, some way, they could throw a pencil and it could somehow go into the other guy's skin in a gunfight. They don't even have that. They have a dull, for you young people out there, a number two leaded pencil is, I got it in front of me. Remember the old yellow school style pencils? The Jayhawks can't even afford to sharpen their pencil. Well, they can afford it, but they don't have anybody that's willing to go out there and be that sharp end of the pencil. I mean, it's just unbelievably god-awful, their quarterback situation. And until they solve it, I don't care how many great recruits KU gets in. Well, we got 3 stars coming in now. We got 4 stars coming in. Listen, that's great and all. Until you get a quarterback, you're not going anywhere. I don't care who the coach is. I don't care if Bill Belichick comes to the University of Kansas. If he doesn't have a quarterback, he's not going to have a lot of success there. I mean, Puka Williams, they totally don't even, I mean, he's a wasted weapon. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, oh my Lord, this is all they got. Miles Kendrick, who was not good. He was all right early in against Coastal Carolina. The Daniels kids who they want to go with, he's a true freshman. He's hurt, so he can't play. McVitie could have actually played there. Like, you know what, you're not even as good as Kendrick, which yikes. I mean, KU had 157 yards of offense against a defense that's decent, nothing great. And they had 17 yards in the second half. But here's the good news. If you're a KU fan and you bet KU to cover the spread, you can thank Puka Williams. You talk about a bad beat. Have you seen bad beats?
Yeah.
Did you watch this?
Yeah.
So I'm watching the game. West Virginia just scored, and there's like, what, 2.5 minutes to go in the game? And West Virginia kicks off, and poor Joel Klatt and Gus Johnson had to call this game because it was the only game on the docket. So that became the big, you know, high noon, whatever, Fox game at 11 a.m.
Big noon kickoff.
Big noon kickoff, which I'm like, wow, how bad is this? Would it be better not to have a game? So anyway, I tune in because I listen on the radio. I was running errands, and I come back, and I watch the game a little bit, and Gus Johnson goes, well, you know, Kansas scored the first 10 points of the game, but it's been all West Virginia since then. There was a third down and two play KU runs right after that. And they run to their running back right up the middle, and he got stuffed for a 2-yard loss. And Joel Klatt goes, why would you even run that play? I mean, Joel Klatt was like, why would you even run that play? You know it won't work. Why would you run that play? That's what Joel Klatt's saying.
Yeah.
So it's 38-10, right? West Virginia, if you don't know, the spread was 22.5. So West Virginia's covering the spread. So let's go through this. This is the bad beat. If Van Pelt doesn't have this on his bad beat situation, then there should be an investigation on ESPN. So it's West Virginia's up 21, so KU's covering. So if you're somebody that was betting West Virginia to cover the spread, you're like, oh, God, come on, guys, West Virginia score. And they do, and you're like, automatic money, baby. KU's got 17 yards of offense. There is no way KU can score. This is automatic. Honey, put it in. Hey, add it to the ledger. We just made a couple $100. $2,000. I put $2,000 on this baby. Yeah, automatic. Sweating it there for a while. West Virginia came through. Yep. Honey, you go on a shopping trip. You're good to go. We need some more groceries. Get a big screen TV. Here's the kickoff. Puka Williams at the 10. 20. Breaks a couple tackles. This is Gus Johnson's call, actually.
Yeah.
He had no excitement.
No.
Gus Johnson was bored to death on a 90-yard kickoff return. And Williams, breaks a couple tackles. And he's midfield 50. And he's at 30. And, oh, Puka Williams is going to score. And he scores. And KU celebrates being down 21 or 22. Kick the extra point. 38-17. And what do you think that person that was all excited about? I hate the Jayhawks. I hate Puka Williams. What is going on? What? That's why I do not gamble on sports, ladies and gentlemen. Because that was a gimme. It was over. And West Virginia decides to kick it deep. What was West Virginia doing? Kick the ball out of bounds. The only way KU was going to score was off a deflected pass or a kick return. Why would you kick it to Puka up 28? Oh, that's right. You're way ahead and you don't care. I care.
Yeah.
I had you at 22.5. I watched that and I'm like, oh, my Lord. If I bet on this game and had KU or had West Virginia covering, I'm losing my mind right now. I'm begging. Was there got to be a flag? There was a hold. Honey, your team's up 28. Why are you yelling at the TV? They're still up 21, honey. I bet $5,000 on KU not to cover. That's why you don't bet, man. That was a bad beat.
I had it.
That cracked
obviously,
me
I was
up.
At NPL volleyball all day, and so I DVR'd the games. Yeah, I wanted to, you know, watch KU so I'd know what happened, and a couple other games like Georgia, Alabama that we'll talk about. But yeah, I'm watching it, and I'm like, does Gus know he's about to score?
I know. Gus was, like, bored out of his mind.
Like, I was like, He's about ready to score a touchdown, and Gus has not hit any kind of crescendo Gus Johnson does.
No. And that was a really nice return.
It was. Yeah. It was a really good return. And he's like, and he's at the 50. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you don't think Gus and them were bored with that game, do you?
Yeah.
Not at all.
I was right at the beginning of it. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is Gus Johnson's time slot. Yeah. I bet he's real excited about Kansas, West Virginia. He's like, thank God Big Ten football starts next week. That's what's going through Gus Johnson's mind.
Nebraska, Ohio State this Saturday, believe it or not. West Virginia outgained KU 544-157. It's really lucky. KU's lucky they only lost by 21. Should have lost by a lot more, to be quite honest with you. Top 25, Clemson put up 73 on Georgia Tech. Imagine what they do to Kansas. 73-7 was the final there. Alabama beat Georgia 41-24. Pulled away in the second half. They were down 24-20 at half, and defense started to get things done. Notre Dame, I watched part of this game. Notre Dame, there's no way they're beating Clemson.
Notre Dame's not that good.
I don't think they're that good either. They're overrated, course, like always.
You know, there's not a lot of Big Ten teams up there yet because they haven't played. So.
True. But they beat Louisville 12-7. That was an ugly game. Florida State beat North Carolina. I wasn't sold on Carolina, and Florida State was up 31-7, almost blew it. So North Carolina lost. They finally get in top five, lose. Mississippi State, after scoring a ton of points in week one, now can't score, which is weird. A&M 28-14 Mississippi State. Miami of Florida ranked 13th, beat Pitt 31-19. Auburn ranked 15th, lost to South Carolina, upset there 30-22. Kentucky had lost 17 in a row in Knoxville against Tennessee. They blew out Tennessee 34-7, had two pick sixes. That helps. And Virginia Tech, number 23, beat Boston College 40-14. Oklahoma State Baylor, that one was postponed. That'll be played in December. So there was only one Big 12 game, if you want to call it a game, and it was KU and West Virginia. K-State, KU, can't wait for the Sunflower beatdown. I mean showdown. I mean matchup. I mean, is it going to be a game or a glorified scrimmage? I'm not sure. But anywho, now, Will Howard is a true freshman and be a quarterback. That might level it up a little bit. And if you're K-State, I would think you just run the ball on KU. But I don't know what KU can do offensively other than get the ball in Puka Williams' hands and hope he does what he did on a kick return. Because KU's got weapons at skill positions. Parchment's a good receiver. They've got some weapons. They just don't have anybody that can get him the ball. Unless direct handoff to Puka, and at times KU doesn't even choose to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you're one-dimensional, and everybody knows Puka's going to get the ball.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's right. Like you can't, if you're running, Puka's going to get it. So just go where that guy goes. It's not that hard to figure out.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, K-State's favored by 18, I think I saw. 17.5-18.
Yeah.
I think that number might go up.
Yeah, and history is not
on
KU's side at all here.
No.
Remember last year they said, oh, this is the year K-State's struggling a little bit. And
yeah.
Got a new coach. They're coming into town. KU might be able to hang with them. That did not work out well.
Number one team in America, you think it's Clemson or Alabama? I'm going to say it's Clemson.
It's hard to tell right now because Alabama's Clemson still doesn't play any.
Well, they played Miami.
Yeah, they beat Miami pretty easily.
Whipped them.
But
Alabama defense isn't great, but yeah, figured some things out the other night.
I think it's Clemson.
I'll go with Clemson for now. Ohio State, many people believe they might be the best team in football.
And
they may finally get the start this weekend. Nebraska gets Ohio State to start. You know, that wasn't a coincidence.
Yeah,
so we enjoy that.
Nebraska didn't do themselves any favors by being so vocal when the Big Ten scheduling started happening for the reschedule here.
Right. Like Nebraska, the administrators didn't complain about it. Fans did. But the administrators didn't complain about it too much because they're just like, you know what, we're at least going to play.
Yeah.
But they weren't happy with the fan thing. The fan attendance was
They were definitely not happy
which
about that.
I understand where they're coming from there. All right, so final score prediction, Chiefs-Bills today at 4 o'clock?
I said they'd cover, so... 35-27
Chiefs. I'm going to say Chiefs win this one 27-24. Chiefs do not cover, but win. You say they cover and win. I'm good with either one. As long as they win.
That's all I care about.
I don't have money on this game like, you know, Earl from Morgantown.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.